it's bursitis. That's why we give you a steroid injection for that bolus anti-inflammatory effect. But they're finding now in research that it's actually not, the bursa is only involved in, you know, 15% of cases. That's actually, and it's really not even inflamed. It's just sort of thickened. So this woman's come in to me. They want to give a steroid injection. I said, let's just try and not do that for the moment and give us an opportunity. Well, she's come back only after one treatment and she's so much better because we've been able to do some bone on her, work out exactly what I think was going on, do some the right bone, which is obviously just some of the basic work like BRMs and pelvic, give us some gentle exercises to do, and she's so much better.
Welcome to BowenFest 23 podcast series. Join Vanessa King in conversation with Chris Reed. What is causing my back or hip pain?
I'm very pleased to welcome Chris Reed to the BowenFest 23 podcast series. Chris has been involved in natural therapy since 1996 as a remedial therapist. In 1997, he trained as a bone therapist and in 2004 became an instructor. Chris has completed an advanced diploma in myotherapy and is currently 1 unit away from obtaining his Bachelor of Health Science, clinical myotherapy, gaining further knowledge in assessment and rehab measures. Chris's mission is to inspire happy and healthy lives and works to achieve this by operating his clinic in Geelong, teaching Bowen therapy locally, nationally and internationally, producing the Bowen Buzz podcast, current chair of Bowen Training Australia, co-founder of Business of Bowen, and striving to share his passion and his understanding of the amazing Bowen technique. Chris, your topic today is all about back and hip pain. Can you start by telling us why you've chosen this topic?
Oh, Vanessa, thanks. Thanks very much for having me. So yes, fantastic to be here. And why talk about pelvic and hip pain? It's just because we see so much of it, Vanessa, I think. So many people that walk through the doors of my clinic have got a pain or complain about something that, and the pain is often originating coming from their lower back or their pelvis generally in that area. I mean, just if you like some stats, 80% of the population at some stage will have lower back pain, or potentially the what they call these days non-specific low back pain, because it's very hard to determine exactly why where people's pain is coming from in their lower back. So if we sort of talk about this pelvis area from everywhere from, say, L5 and then down through the pelvis and encompassing the hips, about up 15 to 35% of people have facet joint pain. Sciatica, about 40% of the population will have sciatica at some stage of their life. These are enormous numbers of people, aren't they? And then one of the big ones is because I see so many women, my core constituency, I suppose, the number of people that come through my door, the predominant demographic is women aged between probably 35 and 75, and so many of those have what may have been called in the past bursitis, what they sort of call these days greater trochanteric pain syndrome, so this lateral hip pain. It's really like, so 23% of females aged between 50 and 79 have got this condition. So they will have it, not they can have it in their lifetime. So maybe about 8-9% of males will have it in that age group. But it's also, you know, the number one source of pain in 20 to 35% of people with low back pain coming from the lateral hip. I just see it so much of it. And I think if we can have a really good understanding of the different reasons why people might be presenting with pain in this area and perhaps what we can do about it from a Bowen point of view, and certainly, and then perhaps reinforce that with some therapeutic exercise that can be targeted towards the actual reason for their pain, then we're going to get much better outcomes for our clients.
Thanks. That's great, Chris. That's really interesting stats. You know, I think it's always interesting to sort of, you know, it shows that you've done your research and, you know, you can link things to cause and effect, I guess. But that's really wonderful. Thank you for that. Can we begin at the beginning? So how do we determine the different origins of the pain that someone presents with, whether it's hip or back?
Yeah, I suppose we have to, the first thing that we do is have a conversation with our clients, isn't it? That subjective story, that subjective question is so important, and so important that we're actively listening and giving feedback and hearing what the person's saying. Because some of the, what they talk about, how, when their pain comes on, how long they've had it, you know, all these things, how severe is it, what will make it worse, what makes it better. So that subjective questioning is so important. So that's often that. So I suppose by the time you've run through that algorithm, we use that in the actual course we talk about, and I use it in my clinic every day, that algorithm of the, it's Wachsnor is the anagram. So where is the pain? How long have you had it? The consistency, how is it there all the time? Does it come and go? How severe is it? You know, what's the nature of the pain? Is it a burning pain or a dull ache, or is it, you know, what words do the client use to describe their pain? And what other symptoms have they got alongside of that? And then is there a relationship between the two? So just using that algorithm in that subjective questioning, which then leads on to so many other conversations and questions. So, and then obviously another big part of that is getting an understanding of their psychology as well, because one of the things I always are cognizant of is that we're not just talking about a back pain, that we don't have a back pain walking to our clinic. We actually have a person walking into our clinic who's got back pain. So understanding where that person's coming from. And sometimes if we only have a 3 or 4 minute conversation with somebody, we're not going to get to that point. But for example, yesterday I had a lady there and we're having a good conversation about her pain. And she started crying after about 15 minutes into this conversation. She said, I'm not going to go here. I don't want to go here. And then, but she did. So because we really got to the fact that she'd had 3 people in her life very close to pass away in the last 12 months. She made redundant from her job 6 months ago. There's all these things that were going on. And now she's got this pain that she feels that she's broken and she can't move forward. So that psychology is all wrapped up in her pain as well. You know, so we talk about having this, looking this at the biopsychosocial framework of this person, so that they're, you know, that yes, the bio, yes, they might have some pathology. It might be a tendinopathy or something like that, but they've also got the psychology and the social side of it as well. So yeah, I moved beyond the question there, Vanessa, but so that's why you asked why it's important to know where it's coming from. Is that was actually the crux of it. So I think that, so if we can then find out where it's actually coming from, we can then target our treatment towards what we think it is. And now we do say to our students, so we don't diagnose, but really we do. We are diagnosing things. If you like, we can call it a clinical impression that we come up with. So based on your knowledge, based on the client's story, we can then start to think, okay, what do I think this is? What potentially 3 or 4 things could be causing this pain? And then how do I go about now determining which one of them I really think it is, so that I can target my treatment with Bowen and then target my therapeutic exercise?
That's really great. We know that Michael Quinlivan is known to say, if you aren't assessing, you are only guessing. How can people improve their assessment skills?
Yeah, Michael Quinlivan is a classic. And he's only just retired recently. Fantastic, Michael and Michael Quinlivan and Karen. They're wonderful therapists and wonderful instructors and trainers as well. Yes, Michael says, if you're not assessing, you're only guessing, which is pretty true, I suppose. But we can make some very good guesses from our subjective questions, as I said. So, you know, but there still would be, you know, probably 3 or 4 things you can't determine exactly what's going on or have a better idea of what's going on if you don't do some assessment. And I've spent, as you said in the introduction there, that I've got, you know, 1 unit to go in my clinical myotherapy degree. And really a lot of that has been learning about getting clear on what do I think this person is actually dealing with here? What's the pathology behind this? And then how can I address it better? So really, I think reading, there's so much information on the internet these days about assessments. There's a couple, there's some guys, a couple of guys called the physio tutors on YouTube that have hundreds of videos, very short videos on specific orthopedic tests, and they base it on research. So it's they're really good with what they've got around them. But I think it's important to know whether we're dealing with, you know, a gluteal tendinopathy, or whether we're dealing with sciatic pain, or whether it's coming from the facet joint, because the treatment and the treatment options are going to be probably different. And now with bone, they may not be 100%, like they may not be radically different, but I think then we can reassess, because then we know, are we on the right tram? Have I sort of diagnosed this, or is my clinical impression correct here? Is the person getting better because of the treatment and the exercise I've given them, or not? And if they're not, then we need to reassess and say, okay, I haven't quite got this right. What's going on? So I think the way that we can improve our assessment skills is to read and just continually learn. As I said, there's so much on the internet, and attending workshops that come up with people, with trainers from other areas perhaps, or that are more specific for these types of things. Yeah,
that's really good. Thanks. Because do you find that, you know, you may find that people have some structural imbalance, or more some soft tissue imbalance? And by soft tissue, I mean, just from the digestive tract, if someone might have irritable bowel, or, you know, when you're looking at the soft tissue of the bowel, you know, the upper intestine, etc. Or do you find a real difference of what you're looking for?
Look, there can be, and obviously there's so many things that can give you pain in that lower area. If we think about pelvis and that lower abdominal area, a lot of the things that we go into in this workshop that I'm doing, this pelvic workshop, we look at primarily some biological and anatomical sort of issues around, as I said, sciatica, facet joint pain, myofascial pain syndrome, which is sort of where this sort of fits almost. But myofascial pain is what in the past might have been called trigger points. So you get referral into different areas from a myofascial problem. And then, as I said, gluteal tendinopathy is often the big one as well, what might have been called bursitis in the past. As far as coming from the gut, yes, there certainly can be some pain into, or the viscera can go to certain areas, can't it? And then I suppose we haven't even touched on endometriosis as well, and those sort of lower abdominal pain things as well. We don't tend to go into that in this course, but there's certainly another. It's funny, when you start writing something, you think, okay, I've got 2 days to deliver this. How do we do that? And then you start thinking so much else that I haven't got to yet. Maybe we need to do another iteration. So maybe there's a pelvic two. There will be a pelvic two on the way. So because there's so much that comes into this area.
That's great. I've heard that you speak about the significance of the BRMs in your online pelvis workshop. Can you share with us why these moves are so impactful for hip and back pain?
That's where Bowen is so amazing, I think, Vanessa. The work that we do in our clinics, and also I'll speak for myself, the work that I do in my clinics every day, although I've certainly done and teach the diploma and the SP1 moves and the SP2 moves, so much of what we do is that basic, what we call basic Bowen, what we learn in that first course that we ever do. And BRMs are part of that, and the first thing that we actually obviously learn. They're just so powerful in the way that they can actually have the body start to heal, if you like, or start to repair from those first few moves. And we've heard Ozzy say that you put those first two moves in the lower back and the body gets the message that it's going to be okay, the cavalry's here. This is exactly what Ozzy says. And that's what happens. The body starts that process of healing. And I think because if we think about moves 3 and 4 of BRM1, we're hitting those points there. And I see so much of this. And I suppose a lot of this is originally driven because of these women I talk about that come in with this lateral hip pain that might be pain in the glute, pain in the back, pain going down the side of the leg. It can all be gradual pain syndrome or coming from gluteal tendinopathy. So, you know, bearing those moves 3 and 4, we're making a move right over the middle of glute med. We're right just in that top section of glute min, and we're coming over the edge of glute max. And that those primary abductors of the hip, that gluteus minimus and gluteus minimus, are so often involved And as I said, 23% of women in that age group of 50 to 79 will have tendinopathy of those two muscles. So if we can, with the almost magic of Bowen, begin to get those muscles to switch on better, to get those tendons to begin to change, because there's some pathology, there's some tendinopathy there, and the muscle gets stronger, then we can really impact on their pain. It was terrific. I mean, even yesterday I had someone who was very, very close to Tom Bowen. And in fact, the first time I met this lady, I said to her, when was the last time you had Bowen? She said, the last time Mr. Bowen worked on me. I thought, oh my goodness. And she's come in with exactly this. Now, she's got lateral hip pain. She's limping. She's having a lot of trouble walking, going upstairs, getting out of the car. These were things that were really bothering her. She's not an elderly lady, but it was really starting to affect her life. And she wants to go away on a big holiday in a few months' time. And she said, I've been to the GP and he said he thinks I've got bursitis and he wants to give me a steroid injection, which is quite amazing that they just dole these things out like lollipops sometimes, because we know, and the research tells us, that corticosteroid will kill tendon cells. So it's toxic to tendon cells, and it's toxic to chondrocytes, which are the cells that make up our cartilage. The cartilage that makes that smooth end of the bone. So we inject something either into the tendon, into the area, or intra-articular, so into the joint, with a chance that they're actually going to make the situation worse. And if you want to actually make it more diabolical, you add a local anesthetic. So generally they will add a local anesthetic anyway, not to make it worse, but because it actually helps with the pain initially. But that makes it more toxic again. So if you put something like lignocaine in with the steroid, inject it into the tendon area, and in the past they said, yes, it's the bursa, it's bursitis. That's why we give you a steroid injection for that bolus anti-inflammatory effect. But they're finding now in research that it's actually not, the bursa is only involved in, 15% of cases that's actually, and it's really not even inflamed, it's just sort of thickened. So this woman's come in to me. They said, I want to give a steroid injection. I said, let's just try and not do that for the moment and give us an opportunity. Well, she's come back only after one treatment and she's so much better because we've been able to do some Bowen on her, work out exactly what I think was going on, do some the right Bowen, which is obviously just some of the basic work like BRMs and pelvic, give her some gentle exercises to do, and she's so much better. So, I think with steroid injections, more than half the time they don't work. Maybe 25% of the time people get relief, and they'll only get generally short-term relief. So one of the things we talk about is that, the research has shown that they did some really great research around this. So they did one where they people would get a cortisone injection, and the other, the control group just got saline. After 2 months, there was no difference in pain in either one. In fact, it was funny, the saline actually had slightly higher efficacy, which is just ridiculous. So, but then they had another research where they had a wait and see group, they had a corticosteroid injection group, and they also had a education and exercise group. Now, all the way along, the education exercise group had far better results than either the wait and see group or the corticosteroid injection group. And at certainly the end of 12 months, there was no difference between the two. So really, there's risks with injections, and I suppose I get a bit of a bee in my bonnet about this, and I see so many people come in saying, I've just had an injection, or the doctor wants to give me an injection. It's really not the best thing to do. So, as I said, I see so much of it, and if we can help people with our fantastic Bowen and some exercise, then it's much better than getting, injections.
Thank you for that. I think we noticed that in New Zealand as well, that the steroid injection is becoming quite popular as well. Is there any time limit or breaks that people need from having the injection before they can have the Bowen? Chris, do you have any recommendations? People might just turn up and say, I had a steroid injection 2 days ago. Are you okay to continue with the Bowen?
I would probably give it a bit of time, I think, because there obviously, as I said, can be some side effects from the steroid injection as well. People can get infections. People can get some really nasty side effects potentially. So I wouldn't be going straight in. I'd give it at least a couple of weeks, because they do say, don't do anything for a few days anyway with that. So you don't want to be sort of being almost complicit in an issue if one's going to come up. So I'd certainly be giving it a few weeks or a couple of weeks at least anyway. They really might not get any benefit from the corticosteroid injection for a couple of weeks. So, you know, sometimes I think just give it that opportunity. Say, look, maybe come back and see me 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that. And you can say, how have you gone? If after 2 weeks they've got no benefit whatsoever, they're probably not going to get any benefit from the corticosteroid injection.
Thank you. That's interesting.
And certainly if it's not inflammation, once that anesthetic wears off, they're going to be right back to where they started from. And it's generally not inflammation is the problem. It's generally a degradation of the tendons. So pathology within the tendons, which is why they call it a tendinopathy, which the only way to turn that around, we know that tendons love load. They love appropriate load. So if you can load them appropriately, they'll get better. If you rest them, they won't. So what we need to do is give the people some correct exercises and then get them moving, and they will get a lot better.
Awesome. That's great. Thanks. I've learned a lot about that, actually. That's lovely. Thank you. People presenting with back pain are often quite scared. They hold themselves stiffly and are so worried about sometimes even just lying down on the table. How do you deal with people who appear to be in such acute pain?
That's a great question, Vanessa. And I think some of this starts to come back to having some understanding of pain and being able to educate our clients around pain. One of the worst things that someone can do is not move. So fear of movement is a terrible thing, because you say they hold themselves so rigidly, and we know that movement is medicine. We know that motion is lotion, and all those things that we can say. So we have to encourage our clients to move, but they need to feel safe. I mean, one of the reasons that people have pain and why their pain is so acute is because the body's in protect mode. So how do we get the person to lower their sensitivity and lower their protectometer so that they're not feeling that they're so vulnerable and they're in a safe space? So, I mean, sometimes people won't lay on the table. This week I've got a lady who comes and she won't lay face down because she's so fearful that her back is going to hurt. Now, I know that I think if she laid prone, I don't think her back would, right? But she's so fearful that it will. It probably would. Do you know what I mean? So it's almost like it's a decision she's made. So when you see people pick things up, people say, oh, don't bend your back when you pick something up. Don't bend your spine. Keep it nice and straight and keep it stable. But that's the worst thing you can do. Our backs were made to bend. You know, so we need to be able to move. So I think having some confidence in what you're saying to clients is really important, so that you can actually educate them and try and remove some of this fear. So this lady who won't lay on her tummy, the wonderful thing about Bowen is we can do her seated. So I can treat her sitting up, and we do. And she's going to, she'll move forward. She'll move forward over time. But, you know, when you lay your hands on somebody and you feel that they are just rigid and they're holding themselves so tight, you know, and that's a subconscious thing. That's the body in protect mode. It's just going to, as I said, come back to us trying to educate them, have them feel they're in a safe space, and they can start to let go.
Great. Do you have any thoughts about the medication that people are taking for pain, Chris? I mean, I know that, you know, this is beyond our scope of practice, but do you notice that the more pain relief people take, you know, they might take, Voltaren and then gabapentin, so that you can see that the doctors are targeting nerve pain or anti-inflammatory with the Voltaren, and then paracetamol just as a general painkiller. Do you have any comments that you'd like to share with everyone there?
Like I say, we have to stay within our scope on this, Vanessa, which is sometimes referring people back to their GP to ask a question if you'd like to ask them. But you're right, some people come in and when you ask about what medications you're on, that they get out, they pull out a list, or they get their phone out, or they, you know, they've got it. It's not like, and you sort of have almost like two sets of people there. You'll have one set who will be on a fair bit of medication, sometimes because the doctor's trying to work out what can we do to reduce this pain for this person, because sometimes that's the only lever the doctor's got to pull is a medication lever, really. But they may refer them, say, to a physiotherapist or to, you know, a myo or someone like that. It'd be nice when they start referring them to Bowen therapist, but that's another story. But yeah, so they've only got really the medication lever. So sometimes they add a medication, they add another medication, and people have so much going on that we're not really sure what's working and potentially what's not. But sometimes the medications obviously have side effects, which then can affect them in other ways as well. But then you've got the other side of the coin is people who don't want to take any pain medication. And they don't want to because they think it's a sign of, well, perhaps weakness, or is it, I don't want to be on pharmaceuticals and that sort of thing. Whereas they might be doing themselves a disservice as well. So if the doctor's recommended to them that maybe some Panadol might be a good idea, but they say, I don't even want to take Panadol, you know. And I say to those people, perhaps if you can get a better night's sleep and maybe a cup of Panadol or some ibuprofen or something like that may be able to assist with you a better night's sleep, your pain's going to be less the next day. The body's going to be able to heal itself better if you can get a better night's sleep. So maybe that's an important conversation there for people that have been told maybe to take an anti-inflammatory by their GP or to take some Panadol Osteo or something like that. Or they say, I only take one. He said I could take two, but I only take one because I don't want to take too much. Well, maybe one's not a therapeutic dose. So, you know, going back and saying what should you be on so that you can get relief, because the body doesn't heal well when it's in pain. It goes into a survival protective mode, and we can't move as well. If we say that we want our clients to move so that their backs get used to moving and they're not as fearful of moving, well, maybe having a little bit less pain will assist them to do that, and they're not going to be quite as scared. But certainly having an idea of what those medications are. And I think one of the best questions is, what's that for? So if they say they're on gabapentin and you're not quite sure what gabapentin is prescribed for, just say, why has the doctor got you on that one there? And they might say, oh, it's for my nerve pain. But the problem is, if it's not a nerve problem, the gabapentin might be working because it's not targeting the issue, which once again comes back into our assessment skills. So the better our assessment skills are, the better we can actually help our client too, because just because a doctor's diagnosed something doesn't mean that's what's going on. And I think we have to tread carefully there. And we're not going to say, oh, no, to the client, oh, no, that's incorrect. What are you saying that for? That's wrong. I think it's this. We just need to be careful. But in our treatment and in our perhaps our exercise prescription after we've done our Bowen, maybe we can be looking at another way of going about it. Like this, as I've said before about some of the pain referral zones for gluteal tendinopathy, it can mimic sciatic pain. Like so much, like you can go down the side of the leg, or even a myofascial pain, from glute med, so that trigger point, what we used to call in the old days called trigger point referral zone, goes into the buttock, the back of the leg, and down the side of the calf, which is a classic sciatic referral zone. But it's not coming from the nerve at all; it's coming from a muscle. So if we're only treating the nerve, we're not going to be impacting on that person's pain.
Great, thank you. I've got two questions about rehab. One is, can you share with us some of the basics of rehab we can be supporting our clients with, and how do we get them to actually do that?
That's the age-old question, how do we get them to do that? That compliance, the non-compliant client, yes. But really, I think if the person can have confidence in you, that you say, look, when you do this exercise, you are going to feel better, and you can cite some past clients that you've had, obviously that we can't always. So we're going to replicate everything that happens. But, you know, if you do this exercise, it's like, so for example, gluteal tendinopathy, we come back to that one. It's a very gentle exercise. So it's isometric, so there's no movement, but there's just gentle contraction where I get people to use a belt, pop it around the top of their knees, and the client does a very gentle abduction, lying on their back or sitting in a chair. They can do it either way. So that we're targeting those, putting a very gentle load through that glute med tendon, which, as we said before, they need appropriate load if they're going to start that regeneration healing process. It's amazing. That exercise, that very gentle isometric exercise, it's a bit like taking a couple of Panadol. It could actually reduce the pain. And research has shown that isometric exercise, the appropriate load, is like analgesics. It just reduces the pain for people. So they can walk better and they can feel better. And straight away they're saying, okay, what this therapist is doing for me is working. So by doing some great Bowen on them and using the appropriate procedures around the area and then giving them a correct exercise, it can just really add that next bit. And I think that's probably been my journey over the last almost 20 years, Vanessa. When I first did my Bowen, It's Bowen's a passive treatment and it has amazing results, but it's not the only thing that we can do. And I think adding that next bit on, what do I send my client home with? And when we learn at Bowen, we do learn some of those, some basic exercises that that Tom Bowen passed on to Ozzy, like the brilliant pelvic exercise that we do with the leg laying in bed. The client does laying on their back, that pelvic exercise where you drag it up and then raise the leg, put it in the air and then put it down again. There's the hamstring exercise, which actually I think is actually a nerve slider. I think it's actually a glute, a sciatic nerve slider. If you look at that, that hamstring exercise that we do, yes, it targets the hamstring as well, but I think it's also actually a really good sciatic nerve slider as well. So the shoulder exercise. So exercises are built into our basic Bowen course, but I think if we can learn some more. So it's not like exercise is contraindicated after Bowen. It's certainly not, because we're taught to give our clients exercise. I mean, one of the best exercises we get any client to do is to go for a walk. And that we get, we learn that with that walk, water and weight. The walk part is about either movement. Yes, it's walking, but it might also be a specific exercise as well. It comes under that walk on the three W's that we learn about in our very basic Bowen.
Interesting. Do you have anything to say about, you know, when people say, oh, can I go to the gym this afternoon, you know, and you sort of get the impression that that's what they do a lot of anyway. And sometimes you wonder whether they're going to sort of, they're really listening, but they just want your opinion, I guess. Do you have anything to say about that? Some people like yoga, some people like going to the gym to lift weights. And do you have any recommendations?
What I generally say to them, and we all get asked that a bit, don't we? What I generally say is, I tell you what about tonight? Why don't you just go for a nice walk? You know, rather than sort of, because you're not, of course, quite sure what they're going to be doing in the gym. They might even get in the spa at the end of it. So you don't want them necessarily to do that. So I say, look, would it matter if you didn't go to the gym tonight? Maybe just go for a nice walk and you can see how you feel tomorrow. And then perhaps if you want to, you can go to the gym tomorrow or do the yoga tomorrow or just skip that one. It's a bit like when they say, I've got a chiropractic appointment tomorrow. I might say, well, maybe we just give that one a bit of a miss this week and give the Bowen an opportunity to do its thing. And, you know, talking to them about how when you leave me here today, your body's leaving with a stimulus that it's still working on. And what we don't want to do is overlay that stimulus with something that may interrupt it. So let's just give the Bowen an opportunity. I've heard Ozzy say that Bowen used to say the healing happens overnight. So that first night is so important. So if we can leave with that stimulus that we've given it, and quite often students say to me, how do you know what order to do things? What do you proceed? Did you leave with? And I say, leave them. The last thing you do is the thing you want that body to remember and to work on as they walk out the door. I mean, quite often with the SP2, there's a number of SP2 procedures where, you know, it's very prescriptive. You do this, and Ozzy says you do not do anything else on the day. Leave the body with that stimulus, and that stimulus doesn't stop when they get off the table, as we know.
Awesome. Thank you. That's lovely. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. It's been a real delight once again to talk to you. Is there one message you would have for Bowen therapists listening to our conversation?
I think my one message is just keep learning. I started my Bowen back in the late 90s. I'm still at school. As you said, we said right at the start, I've got 1 year to go to finish this degree. I love being a student and I love learning. And I think the more that we can learn, the more that we can help our clients to add to this amazing technique of Bowen that we do.
We hope you enjoyed the conversation, but it doesn't end there. In the show notes below, you'll find a link where you can submit your own question, something that has piqued your interest from the conversation, to ask the presenter. This will happen on Thursday, the 19th of October, during Bowen Fest 23 Live, where all our presenters will be part of a Q&A panel. Put your question forward and have it answered on the night so that we can extend the conversation further, learn more, and connect more deeply. You've been listening to Bowen Fest 23 podcast series, proudly presented by Bowen Therapy New Zealand and the Bowen Association of Australia.